My guest today is Jim Rinaldi, the NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Chief Information Officer. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, this is kind of a first time for you on our show. I'm excited to have you on. I have had plenty of NASA centers on, you know, the CIOs from NASA centers on the show before, but I don't think I've ever had JPL on. So let's start with some basics. What is the mission of the Jet Propulsion Lab?
We're the Robotic Space Exploration and Earth Science Center for NASA. So we're the guys who put cars on Mars, if you will, and the rovers and things of that nature. We also operate the Deep Space Network for NASA. That tracks spacecraft well beyond our planet's orbit. So we play a big role for NASA, and we're very proud to do that. We are a federally funded research and development center operated by Caltech. I'm a Caltech employee, and we're located in Pasadena, California, and it's roughly 5,000 employees here at JPL.
And from a CIO's perspective, deep space exploration must be a lot of fun. Does that put a different tactic on you from a CIO's perspective, or is being a CIO being a CIO?
It does put a different tactic. It does. First of all, it's obviously very unique, and so the requirements of IT at JPL can, in many ways, be very unique. So it's very exciting, I can tell you that, because I'm in conversations and meetings that nobody else around the world would be in. And so as a CIO, I'm privileged to be at the table and listening to these things and being a part of the lab that and helping execute against the missions that we undertake here at JPL.
So when the Mars rover landed, were you part of the group that was celebrating, or were you kind of off to the corner, kind of knowing that as Mars rover sends back information, that's your network it's riding on? At least?
Well, I was in the adjoining building, and I was hosting all the NASA CIO and all the center CIOs, and we were celebrating together. It was probably the most exciting career night I've ever had in my life. So I still get chills, thinking about it. And it certainly was a privilege to be here that night. It was a fantastic environment, and things could have gone wrong, but luckily things went really well. So we continue to enjoy that success.
Talk a little bit about your background a little bit. I know you mentioned you're a Caltech employee, but did you also work for the federal government before coming to JPL?
Yes, right before I joined JPL, I was CIO at FDA, and for about 3 years, and really had enjoyed my time there. It's a fantastic organization, and I stay in contact with a lot of friends. And prior to that, I spent 14 months at IRS, and IRS was my first time in government. I was with Marriott for almost 16 years in the D.C. area. So it was certainly a big change for me, but I did gain a lot. I learned a lot, and I understood how the government works a lot more than the average person, who may not realize how many noble people take on this work to support the nation.
And it's interesting. I always ask people, how did they end up where they ended up? So you were at FDA for 3 years, and all of a sudden you move over to JPL. Doesn't sound like a very similar mission, but from your background perspective, did you apply for NASA JPL for any specific reason, or did someone come find you? Just give me a sense of how you ended up at NASA.
Someone came and found me. I had been familiar with NASA because the CIO at FDA, the current NASA CIO at that time, had asked me to be a part of a review committee. And so I got to know a little bit more about NASA inside. And meanwhile, I was being recruited to JPL. So it was, very coincidental, but timely at the same time. And so I was recruited. I love working with researchers and scientists and very intelligent people, like we had at FDA in the medical side. And then here at JPL, a whole different world of science and research and technologists. So it really, as a CIO, it's great to work with people that are, certainly as these guys are. Now, one thing I have to tell you, that this is the only place I've been, the first place I've ever been, where I'm not the nerd. So it was kind of refreshing for a change.
Well, it's always nice when other people want to know more about technology and tell you about it more than you want to tell everybody else. So, which actually, that's a great segue, because discuss your role as CIO, because you have back office IT to worry about, you have mission IT to worry about, and you have a lot of scientists and others, engineers, who probably know as much or more about IT than you do that want to use their own IT. So you got to find some balance there.
That's a very true statement there. The skill sets here could certainly develop world-class things, and certainly that I sometimes benefit from, quite frankly. So I have a seat at the executive table, and I represent not only what IT does, but also how I can impact the lab as a leader. And so that's a very important role to be in. From an IT perspective, we manage all the back office, all the networks, and certainly the key applications that we implement and are responsible for, but also the owning the IT architecture, such that if there are people developing certain types of tools that they need, they can develop within an architecture that we can support and fits our security and things of that nature.
Do you find it that you're pulled in one direction or the other? I mean, does most of your day start with looking at the back office, make sure the network and storage and all that is up and running? Or are you more in the mission side, because that's really where things get done?
Well, as CIO, you don't get to choose which side you're on. You're in all of it, and it's all of it's important. So we're all here for the missions, and that's first and foremost. So if the network's up and running, it's supporting the mission. And I spend a lot of time in both areas. The mission side, we don't do in my organization, we don't write the software for spacecraft or our ground software. We support it, though, in terms of the infrastructure and the services that those software developers need to create the mission IT. And so we feel that we're an important part of that. And of course, we've got to secure it as well and make sure they can work in a very secure environment.
And I know we'll talk about cyber and we'll talk about a bunch of things coming up later in the show. Let me talk about your office a little bit. A lot of people want to know about, how many federal employees you have. Now, of course, you may not have any because you're a federally funded research and development organization. So how many employees do you have that work in IT and your IT budget for 2015?
We're in the employees, and we don't have civil servants. They're all Caltech employees, but we're in the just under 300 and about 200 contractors to support all the work that we do. The overhead budget tends to be in around the 28 million range, and but our IT spend, can be greater than that. And I have people who are directly funded by the mission work for some of the technical work they do. So our funding can range in terms of well over $100 million. But the overhead budget where my office is particularly supported is around 28.
Again, that 28 is the, as they call the operations and maintenance of your office, the people.
That's correct.
Yeah, and then the other $100 million could come in through mission focused work where someone says, hey, help us develop this software and here's some money to do it.
That's right. And we do contract out quite a bit of the work so that we can keep the JPLers focused on what is important here, and then use contractors for a lot of the things that they may have more expertise at, or that's more commodity work.
And from a skill set perspective, coming into a place like Pasadena, where there's a hotbed of IT talent in California, but as well as because you're doing something very special, as you said, not many people do it around the world, if any. Do you find that you're able to hire a workforce that meets your needs? And if so, are there some skill sets that you're most in need of, or you feel like you've got a pretty good handle on?
This area is a hotbed, but JPL for what it does is a huge draw. People want to come to JPL for what the mission is, and so that really helps me in attracting talent. Also, we're blessed with a number of universities around us and around the country that produce amazing talent that comes to JPL. And also, we have a very healthy and rewarding summer intern program and summer student program. And the talent that we see coming there is amazing, but it also gives us an inside track on talent coming to join us after they graduate and complete their school years.
I think that's so key, is having that pipeline of people coming, understanding what you do, how you work, and then when they come in, there's at least some, you know, familiarity, some recognition about, okay, what they're getting into. I think that's very much key.
It's a fantastic experience, and we look forward to it every year. We do look at skill sets that tend to be emerging, and we use quite a bit of now as IT data scientist, you know, which is a relatively new term in the world of IT. And also, though, we still need good network people. We, you know, the skill sets around various system administration skills, whether it's Linux, Unix, Windows, those skill sets are important to us. And then, of course, all the development skill sets with the newer capabilities, whether it's web services or analytic services, or and certainly now the hot commodity is more in the cloud architecture and cloud development capabilities. So we tend to attract a lot of good people in that, and it's helping us, you know, keep adapting and adopting the right emerging technologies into JPL.
And that leaves us a great segue for our next segment. But first, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of those ways you are adopting and adapting the right emerging technologies. My guest today is Jim Rinaldi, the NASA Jet Propulsion Lab CIO. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Jim Rinaldi, the NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Chief Information Officer. Now, Jim, before break, we're talking a lot about JPL, how it works, how do you as the CIO support JPL. One of the things you mentioned just toward the end is this idea of adapting and adopting emerging technologies. And I think that's key for any CIO. Talk a little bit about how you are doing that, because a lot of times I hear from CIOs is all about innovation, and more innovation.
It's almost, you know, a joke here at JPL, because this place is all about innovation. So we were laughing the other day in a meeting because of the, we keep talking about, you know, should we be more innovative? And then the lab director mentioned, how much more innovative can we be? So we are continuous looking at how we can innovate, but certainly in the missions that we do, because there's rarely any two missions that are alike. When it comes to IT, though, we do look at emerging technologies and technologies that could be new to JPL that would benefit us in many ways. And we have an approach that, you know, I've been very proud of, and the fact that I have a CTO who works looking, and his job is to look at emerging technologies and work with our customers here at JPL to test out those technologies. We'll do prototypes, and the ones that seem to fit, we'll find a way to bring them in, and those that don't fit, we're informed about it, and we're knowledgeable about it. One philosophy that I'm very strong on is that IT ought to know something about IT, so that you can be the resource to your constituency about, you know, technology, and they can come to us and ask. And what we found is people engage us that way. So we look at newer technologies and disruptive technologies to see what it might do for JPL, and are there things that we can innovate around with that. So, for example, you know, we looked at technologies on whether it's advanced wireless, or is it more the newer or latest versions of home automation that might apply here. We're big into how we can make things easier for JPLers to get their job done, and provide them the tools and capabilities that they do remarkable things with. So we've had great success in that. We've created an IT petting zoo that allows people to see some of the technologies we bring in and test it and play with it. And, you know, and it, we do this at such a low cost that it keeps us from, you know, making big mistakes. We can make small mistakes and try things out. And our customers seem to appreciate that, and they're very engaged with us because we're able to do that.
I love that concept in the IT petting zoo. A lot of times people call it a sandbox, but that's a new term, a petting zoo. Talk a little bit about how that works. Is that something you buy one license or one type of piece of hardware and then ask people to come in, or is there a need and then you try to fulfill the need with different technologies?
Usually it's something that in the petting zoo that we would acquire either one of the latest technologies. You know, we, for example, brought in the Pebble watch before smartwatches became in vogue. And the idea was many of our mission folks who work on Mars missions work on Mars time. And so they would have to have watches made for that. Well, what we did is we took the Pebble watch and we programmed it to have a Mars clock on it. So, you know, it was kind of innovative but fun at the same time, in a sense of solving a real problem for, you know, fairly low cost. We've also done things with whether it's smartphones or smart devices and created some really interesting applications with the newer technologies that benefit not only JPLers, but the ones we put out on the, whether it's the Android store or the Apple store, that provide a unique way of outreach to people outside of NASA as well as within NASA. One, for example, is Spacecraft 3D, that whenever I show that, people just get very, it's like magic trick, and because it uses augmented reality, and it does a great job of explaining our missions, and so it's great for outreach. And that's one example. The term petting zoo actually borrowed from Booz Allen Hamilton. When I was in D.C., I used to visit their petting zoo. And so I just sort of took the name and used it here at JPL.
Well, it's nice that you give them credit, but I still think it's a great concept that actually I don't think I've heard before. So we can continue to share it. One of the things that you bring up when we talk about emerging technologies is actually a partnership between NASA and Microsoft that they announced back in January called OnSite. Talk a little bit about what OnSite is and talk a little bit about how you as the CIO support that mission IT.
Yeah, this was a very interesting partnership, and it used Microsoft's emerging technology called HoloLens, and it provides an immersive visual experience for scientists and engineers. And in particular, the lab is looking at how we can use that for researchers working on Mars missions or any planetary mission where we can capture the visual, and they can actually have that experience of feeling like they're on Mars while they're looking at objects, a rock or, you know, something that's been dug up or so from one of the rovers. And it will help them understand the environment a little bit better, given it's that immersive. We in IT were involved in a sense that, at first, certainly I was aware of it because Microsoft is a vendor I certainly deal with quite often, but also the fact that, you know, it does use a lot of IT that's emerging, and so being aware of it and supporting it in any way we could was part of our goal. Years prior, and part of our emerging technologies that we looked at immersive visualization, and it certainly came from the gaming side of IT. And we could look at that to see if that had some capabilities. So I like to think that that helped us see the possibilities, and I know it did. And we showed it off at our IT Expo that we do every year that seems to be a big hit at the lab, and we get 2,000 to 3,000 people come through it. And people get to experience these kind of technologies, including normal technologies that we provide on a day-to-day basis. And so we have a good way of showcasing some of these things, and hopefully helping people think differently and how they might use technology to solve their own problems.
I want to go back to this concept of immersive visualization in Mars for a second, but the IT Expo, is that something that's open only for JPL or NASA employees? And is it something put on by your office or by all of JPL?
It's put on by my office, and certainly JPLers come through it because they're here daily. And, of course, anybody from NASA are welcome to visit and come through it. It's not generally open to the public, you know, because it's more for our internal services and what we offer for our JPLers. And, you know, but we get a lot of visitors who do come through, and, you know, whether they're visiting me or visiting others here at JPL, they're certainly welcome to come through.
Very interesting. I think that's again, another good concept to get people to understand the services you provide, because a lot of times, and this leads to our next question, and we'll get to in a second about shadow IT, that helps kind of understand, oh, well, I was just about to buy that, whatever that is. I see you already do that. I can just, you know, either get the service from you or buy the service from you or something very similar.
That's correct. And what we found is it's just another way to engage with our customers and provide them a hands-on experience, plus having some of our key suppliers there with us so that they can answer questions. And we find that it's, like I said, wildly popular. And it's something that it's one of the proudest days of the year for me, and I get excited about it every time we do it.
Now, you want to go back to the Mars piece for a second, because you mm-hmm. have immersive visualization. You have watches that bring you on Mars time. I can only imagine the people who work on this can only feel like they're all but on Mars. I mean, is that part of the end goal is?
I think so. It's to be able to see things a little different than what we normally see from a distance or from a report or from a screen that's, for all intents and purposes, 2D. So to have that 3D experience and be able to have it where it feels natural may lead to more insight about what we're exploring. And it's very exciting. I can't wait to see it being used more and more here and see the results of it. But if you take the fact, what gamers do with their own visualization and how you get immersed into it, I think we'll have a good outcome because it's been tried in other ways. And for us to now take that technology and to provide a different experience for our folks, I think, the lab is going to certainly, and NASA will benefit from maybe operating missions a little different than we have in the past.
Well, very cool. I think it's something that if, you took on a road show, you'd have a lot of people very interested as well.
There's no doubt. When we did have something like this at our expo a few years ago, it had the longest line.
Of course. So, because we're all gamers, at least many of us are gamers at heart. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump back into a little bit about Shadow IT, and then we'll get into some of your priorities. My guest today is Jim Rinaldi, the NASA Jet Propulsion Lab CIO. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Jim Rinaldi, the NASA Jet Propulsion Lab CIO. Now, Jim, before break, we were talking about some cool technologies you guys do. And one of the ways you guys do present those technologies is through a petting zoo. And then you also do an IT expo every year. That brings me to my next question about the idea of shadow IT. Now, I saw the NASA headquarters CIO, Larry Sweet, talk, I want to say about 9 months ago, and he talked about how that's something he's really focused on trying to get a handle on. How do you, as a center CIO, deal with that challenge as well?
We do have a workforce that has many experiences and know how to develop software. So we're going to have people create tools on their own. And for the most part, we embrace it. They tend to be very individual or at least team-oriented type developments. Again, if they work within our architecture, then we're in pretty good shape and I feel more comfortable about it. For the most part, we do the brunt of the institutional type of IT that people need. But there are occasions when people really do need a tool for their unique needs. And if we can't do it or they don't know how to ask us to do it, then they will tend to build their own capability. In our center, I have not seen that being a very large problem. It's one we do keep an eye on. And if it starts bleeding into what we do, then we'll take some action on it. But for the most part, people have been pretty good about it. And quite frankly, I've benefited in many cases because sometimes the folks who are doing that can do some work for me. And so I get extended resources that way if they have the time and capability.
One thing about the CIOs that I've talked to over the last year or so is a lot of them are refocusing the organization around customer service. Is that how you're kind of dealing with this issue of, we got the brunt of this institutional IT, but if you need something else, come to us and we'll work with you. Do you have that conversation often with the mission folks?
We do. It used to be much more often. Now it's really more they know us. You know, in years past, when I first got here, they really didn't know how to ask for IT. And so it was natural for people to build their own. And now that I've been here, and it's 10 years this week, that, you know, they know me, they know my organization, and they tend to come and ask us. So I think we've, you know, found a way to live with what we have and to keep progressing. One thing about shadow IT is it's really an indicator of demand. And as a CIO, I take it as that, not as a threat, but more of, you know, is there an opportunity for us to expand our services and capabilities into other areas? And we look at it that way. But what I find generally about shadow IT is it usually runs out of steam when it gets into sustainability. And the fact that IT changes so frequently, it's really hard for a shadow IT organization to keep current and become cost effective over time. So it tends to work in our favor in general. So that's why I'm not too excited about how to deal with shadow IT, but to engage it the right way.
Well, first of all, happy anniversary. 10 years in a CIO job, or at least at one agency, is a long time, so to speak. So congratulations on that, Mark.
Thank you.
Let's move on to your top priorities. What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
You know, our plans change from year to year. And for the last year or two, though, we've been really working on our data and digital strategies. And, you know, obviously data is a big deal here at JPL, since we collect so much data from space and from our Earth orbiting spacecraft. And the ability for our engineers and our researchers to be able to access that data in a safe and secure way is very important to us. So our data strategy has been to make sure that we know where the data is, it's marked properly, and that we can allow the proper access. And we've made some great inroads in that. It's been a challenge because people weren't always knowing where to put their data, and now we have much better rules of the game, so to speak. So we've also created some better capabilities for people to find data. Our search is not a traditional search. It's very different, using the latest open system software type tools, and we've been able to make it very smart. And so, you know, so that's helped us with our data strategy. On terms of a digital strategy, is one of my highest priorities as well. And that is, how do we automate not only the processes that people tend to be labor intensive on, but also how do we automate the way systems talk to each other, so that we're not creating multiple systems unnecessarily. So we want our strategy to include that the data will stay with the owning system, and we'll access the data from there, so that it stays as pure as possible, and that we're not moving it around and transforming it in several different ways. So we're finding that we can build systems faster if we have that capability, and that when we build systems, we're learning that we don't necessarily have to have systems that last forever. So in some cases, it might be good if they expire after a few years. And so we're taking some different approaches to how we look at data and how we look at systems. And then, of course, probably on everybody's plate is cloud. It's part of our one logical data center strategy, and we've had great success using cloud. We were early adopters of cloud computing. We needed to use it because I have limited physical resources in terms of space, and we found that if we use it the right way and give access to JPLers in a secure way and the appropriate gov clouds, that we can achieve what we need to achieve in a fairly economic way. And so I'm very, very pleased with, you know, the efforts so far, and our hybrid cloud is coming along really well as a part of that strategy. And eventually I hope that anything on premise here at JPL would look more like a private cloud that has the burst capability into a public cloud.
All right, several there to go over. Let me start with the cloud one, because I think that's something that is growing across the government. One of the things you mentioned is you can achieve it through the government cloud in an economical way, which has to lead me to the question about cost savings versus new capabilities at the same price as you were paying before. Is it a little bit of both, or are you finding real cost savings?
Now, we're finding real cost savings. In many cases, it's truly cost avoidance. In the past, people loved to hug their own server, and so we'd buy a lot of servers and storage and infrastructure, like that. And at some point, you're running out of physical space, but you also increase with vulnerabilities and things of that nature. So what we're finding is that by using the cloud in a smart way and putting the right data in the cloud, that we can manage that better. And it's really about flexibility in terms of capacity and better capacity management. And we're finding if we do that appropriately, that we can save money. Not in all cases is it a savings. In some cases, it's a convenience or it's a speed. If you can rapidly provision 100 servers to do a task and you can get the work done in half the time or, percentage of the time, is there some value to that? And many people do find that to be valuable. And then finally, the one that as a CIO really pleases me is that I hate seeing unused capacity, and cloud offers us that scalability so that we don't overbuy in our physical, so we're managing capacity in the most effective way we can.
I remember seeing some statistics as the cloud was getting bigger in 2010, 2011, that most servers are at 10 to 15 to 20% capacity at best, and people just kept buying more because, as you mentioned in the early part, people love to hug their servers. So you're probably seeing that change in terms of using 80 to 90% of the capacity.
Well, that and the fact that the newer employees come in into the workforce really don't want to have a server. They want a laptop, a smartphone, and a cloud account. And so it's also building for the future workforce as well as providing more scalability to the existing work that we have.
What commodity IT have you move to the cloud? Email, storage, anything, web hosting? Give me some examples.
So we've moved a lot of web hosting work, both in for external for public cloud and then internal for in the more of the government and private cloud because of security measures. We're also we haven't moved our email yet. We are we do contract out our email already, and I'm kind of on a wait and see when it comes to email because there's so many others that are doing it that I didn't feel it was a big compelling need on our part at the moment. Usually I do lead. In this case, we thought it might be smart to follow. But other things that we're doing with the cloud is we provide, through our own catalog services, the ability for an individual here at JPL to provision, their cloud instances through our system. And we can then make sure that the security layers are put on every instance that they provision and make sure that it's registered in our security database. So we've automated the process, such that now we don't have to worry when people get a server if they're going to do the right things, and it takes some of the labor out. So I feel very good that we're on the right steps of using the cloud in a very smart way.
I think that's pretty interesting, the provisioning themselves, but it's built in the security. I think that's a key piece here because a lot of times you talk about cloud, people say, well, look how easy it is. You can get something up in minutes or seconds, but they forget that security piece, and you guys seem to have built right in.
That's correct. I don't want people using their own credit cards. All cloud services are to be provisioned through my office, and that way we do have purview into what's there and making sure the proper security layers are in place.
All right. Well, there's a couple more priorities I want to jump into, but first let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about big data and analytics. My guest today is Jim Rinaldi, the NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Jim Rinaldi, NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Chief Information Officer. Now, Jim, before a break, we went through a list of your priorities. We talked about cloud quite a bit, but another one of your major priorities is big data and really data analytics. Talk a little bit about how you are dealing with that issue.
Since we have a lot of data, we're seeing opportunities to use that data in unique ways. And we've taken all the technologies and techniques that we can find and resources that we can find to analyze data in different ways and visualize it in different ways. And we're finding some success in that. First, it's not just for scientists. It's really for our business side. It's for our administrative side, our HR. There are things that people are asking us now to get better insight into how their functions are operating and to analyze why a process, for example, might take too long. We're using analytics to help us with that. And then to visualize things, like, for example, even in security, I'm using it to analyze, you know, all the various logs that we have, and we can see what the trends are in that data and see where our exposures might be that we didn't think about. So it gives us insight into that. And plus, we can visualize some of these things so that people can gain a better understanding of what they're seeing out of the data. So we're pretty excited about that. JPL has a history in data science, so we don't need to teach JPL how to do big data. But at the same time, part of my job is to make sure that our researchers and our very smart engineers have access to the latest tools that they can take advantage of the latest Hadoop and all the tools around that versus other visualization tools that are available. It creates a unique environment sometimes that we have so many different capabilities, but at the same time, I think we benefit from it.
Tools was the next question I was going to ask you. Are you guys looking to bring in new tools? Have you just recently bought new tools?
We tend to look at a lot of the open software tools out there now tend to fit some of our needs, and so we'll look at that and test them out, try them out. That's what helped us with our search capability. It's helped us certainly with a lot of our data analytics capabilities. So, yeah, we do look at and bring in a variety of capabilities as they evolve. And again, as we mentioned earlier, we'll test them out, try them with our users, and the ones that they can benefit from, we keep.
One other piece of this was the digital strategy. When I hear digital strategy, I'm thinking mobility, I'm thinking devices. You mentioned the new employees that come in want three things. They want a laptop, a smartphone, and access to the cloud. Is that where the digital strategy comes in?
It helps. Certainly mobility is a key element of that. And we have a great set of tools so people can work anywhere with any device, in effect, that's allowed. So, yeah, we do. That's an important part. We're seeing a great ability for people wanting to collaborate more. So the collaboration tools, giving them the access to whether it's a chat type tool or a persistent chat, video conferencing, data sharing. And, you know, we have to be very careful because we're not big advocates of the general tools out in the public cloud, for example, that people can share data because of the security concerns. So we have to provide those capabilities inside so people can safely share files, collaboratively work on documents together and things of that nature. And we've had real good feedback on what we provide and what we need to provide. And so it keeps informing us to provide a better capability in our digital strategy. Most surprisingly to me was making sure people are aware of all the capabilities that we actually have so that they don't have to go out and create it themselves and can take advantage of it. And when we communicate effectively with what we have, we're seeing a great uptick in usage, and I think the lab overall is benefiting from it.
It's interesting you mentioned the public cloud. There was an agency that just got a pretty nasty IG report about using Yammer. So that was in the public cloud. It's smart that you guys are looking at that from a security perspective as well. Let me move over to another concept that you've been, I've seen some other reports that you've coined the term chaotic architecture. Discuss what that concept is.
With today's IT world, you know, what I've observed and what we're living with is the opportunities with open software, as I mentioned, blending in with proprietary software that we need for a lot of key systems, and the fact that there's many ecosystems to support and to use, certainly here at JPL. And what I mean by that, if you're in the Microsoft ecosystem, you know, there's several ways you work. If you're in the Apple ecosystem, it's a different way of working with similar tools, but they don't necessarily communicate with each other. And then, you know, it ranges from more common tools across, whether it's, you know, people tend to want to use on their personal life, use Dropbox and those kind of tools, and we're not encouraging that here at JPL, but the fact is they are out there, and our job is to educate people to how to use all these things in a responsible manner. So it does provide what we used to call what's the enterprise architecture, and it turns out the enterprise doesn't really scale. It's one size fits all in people's minds, and so we see this embracing of a chaotic architecture in a sense where there's a core that we provide for the institution, a core set of services and tools and capabilities. And then there's a perimeter of capabilities that people use that might be advantageous for an individual or a team or a project that we embrace and support. And that means that, you know, it fits their needs so they can be the most productive and we can provide the most effective IT for them. So it creates what I consider a chaotic environment in terms of, you know, enforcing standards such that people have to fit to it versus the environment fitting to what they need. And I really think it's the reality of the world we live in today, and it's going to continue for a while. Probably doesn't fit every organization, but I'm finding that we're benefiting from it, quite frankly.
And the concept of saying, we have these two different things that are happening. I think recognizing it helps you then make decisions. As you said, maybe this is good for a team or a project or an individual. Maybe you can kind of put that off to the side so it doesn't come back and impact the bigger architecture, but people still have access to it, or vice versa. It's something that you look at and say, okay, this does fit in well with our architecture, and we can put it and open it up for everyone, even though this team is the only one that needs it. Are you finding those types of opportunities?
Yeah, I am. And what happens is we end up providing the glue, whether it's through directory services or advanced network services, such that they can work. They end up touching the architecture one way or the other. And so we find a way for it to fit, and we benefit from it. And then some things will, you know, just go away after some use. And that's okay, because it was not for the institution. It was for that particular team. You know, there's obviously challenges with this. And first and foremost, everything that we do run it through our cybersecurity group first, and to make sure that we're not bringing in exposures that would put us at risk. So we do have some responsibility, certainly, around that. But once it is here and people have choices, we find that they really do appreciate it, and they work closer with us because they have that choice versus becoming deeper in a shadow, if you will.
And we talked about shadow IT earlier, but even more specifically, you mentioned the need to support Linux, Unix, Windows. I'm sure there's some people who have Apple, iOS type of platforms as well.
Yes.
Because I know engineers are always looking at different, you know, needs. So I'm sure that's where that chaotic architecture fits in, to say it's not a no, because one of the things that people joke around CIO is you can't be CIO, but yes, but.
Yeah, and that's a very true statement. It's one that I think is manageable, certainly in our environment, because of the type of work we do. And you mentioned it, the fact that we have you know, brilliant engineers, and it seems like IT should be supporting them and not them supporting IT. So, you know, it does create that type of environment. We found a way, in my view, to make it manageable because they want to work with us, not run from us.
I think a great point. Well, we are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I know a lot of vendors listen to the show. Real quick, just how should vendors work with JPL?
So when I first got here, one of the most important things and one of the first offices I stood up was my vendor management office. And that office helps guide people to the right organization, the right people, so they can have the most effective conversations and not waste their time, nor waste their time walking around a fairly good-sized lab trying to find people. So we find it helps people understand our strategies, understand our priorities, so that they can target, you know, their capabilities to us in a much better way. And so I'm finding and very thrilled about having a vendor management office. It generally pays for itself every year with the savings and opportunities it looks for in terms of license management, as well as negotiating the right capabilities for us. So it's something I highly encourage in any organization of note that works with multi-vendors. And it also helps the vendors because they tend to all want to get on the CIO calendar, and that's not always easy to do. And they have other people now they can work with that can get them more useful information than many times that I can.
And it's interesting because a lot of times over the last, you know, 3-4 years, there's a lot of talk about vendor management offices, but you never heard whatever happened beyond the talk. Sounds to me, you guys not only talked about it, but you did it, and it's paying off, as you said.
Yes. And again, I'm it's one of those that I think I got right.
Very nice, and it's always good news. I know other CIOs will be interested. But that is all the time we have for today. My guest is Jim Rinaldi, NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Jim, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.